questions you always had, the answers you were never given, the place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
There were till then left the race of giants, who had bodies so large and countenances so entirely different from other men that they were surprising to the sight and terrible to the hearing. The bones of these men are still shown to this very day, unlike to any credible relations of other men. Those were the words from Flavius Josephus, 93 AD. Over a 200-year period, thousands of newspaper reports, town and country histories, letters, photos, diaries, and scientific journals have documented the existence of an ancient race of giants in North America. Extremely tall skeletons, ranging from 7 feet up to a staggering 18 feet tall, have been reportedly uncovered in prehistoric mounds, burial chambers, caves, geometric earthworks, and ancient battlefields. Strange anatomic anomalies, such as double rows of teeth, horned skulls, massive jaws that fit over a modern face, and elongated skulls have also been reported. Many of these discoveries were sent to the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., seemingly never to be heard about again. The Smithsonian's own records describe at least 17 giant skeletons in annual reports. Tonight, we'll examine a possible cover-up initiated by Smithsonian scientists starting in the late 1800s. Greetings, I'm your host, Mel Fabregas at Veritas Radio. If you want to listen to tonight's full interview and all of our material, click on the subscribe button. Join me on Facebook and YouTube. And if you want to get in touch with me, want to be a guest on this radio program, have a guest suggestion, or have feedback, just click on the contact button of our website at veritasradio.com. Now, to tell us more, tonight's special guest is Jim Vieira, a stonemason, researcher, and writer, as well as explorer and writer about the stones sites of New England. He has written for Ancient American Magazine, The Heretic, and local newspapers. In 2012, he created the online blog The Daily Giant that showcased a giant report every day for nearly 2 years. He controversially had his TEDx talk removed from the internet, much like Graham Hancock and Rupert Sheldrake. He is the star of the History Channel TV shows Search for the Lost Giants and Roanoke, Search for the Lost Colony with his brother Bill. Jim Vieira joins us directly from Ashfield, Massachusetts. Hello, Jim, and welcome to Veritas. How are you?
Mel, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. That was a long intro because I think it's well-deserved. As I mentioned before, I've been trying to just conduct an interview to talk about giants because this seems to be a chapter or a big portion of our history that seems, at least to my perspective, been hidden from us. Why do you think that is, Jim?
After all these years, I've come around to believe it's that giants are part of human history and the story of humanity, the story of our civilization. At first, I would make the case it's worthy of even further investigation. And I know you just read our book, and I think you would agree with that conclusion. I can point to racist paradigms in the late 1800s when archaeology and anthropology were formed. There's a lot of belief and conspiracy around these issues. I tend to not get too heavily into the idea of academic conspiracy. I'd rather see it like agenda and the human ego as conspiracy or the problem, if you will. Giants are viewed as a religious idea, just like the Great Flood and other things you find in the Bible, the supernatural, if you will. But now we have new science that is essentially proven 12,800 years ago there was a massive cataclysm and flood in the United States and in North America called the Younger Dryas Impact event. So I think it's size that are drawn and agendas and people are really slow to change, and science is very slow to change as well. And a lot of, as you know, from, you know, talking to other specialists in different alternative fields, that that when something doesn't fit the current paradigm, it's just left on the margins until eventually the evidence builds and things shift, like the Clovis barrier, the idea that nobody entered the United States or North America before 13,000 years ago. That's been overturned. Out of Africa has been overturned. We have Denisovans and hobbits showing up recently. So, you know, that's kind of a long-winded way of trying to answer your question. I would just say that But you know, I don't want to dismiss this idea of some active cover up, at least at the institutional level. I work with professionals and professional digs. I'm friends with many scientists, but I don't trust institutions or corporations as far as I can throw them. So I'll definitely be open to some idea of conspiracy as well.
Of course, I understand that. And what you said is so true. When you talk about giants, mostly religious people will say, "Oh, Goliath." That's what they talk about. That's it. But at the beginning of the book, you write, "To all indigenous Americans, ancient and modern, the legends are true." What do you mean by that?
One of the persons, the researchers who got us interested in this was Ross Hamilton. Now, Ross is well known for being the godfather of giantology. He worked with Vine Deloria, a well-known academic, and Lakota Sioux elder who fought for rights of Native peoples for years. And Vine got together all the elders of all the tribes in the United States in the late 90s and had a conference in Washington State. And the elders, they shared their indigenous oral traditions of both giants and little people. And, you know, I really feel that I'm willing to go anywhere for good stories. So I sit with wisdom keepers. I've done ayahuasca ceremonies, and deal with shamans and mystics all the time. And I basically hear a different story, and one from people with a long lineage, with a lot of integrity. Now in the West, we tend to look at science in a different way. It's kind of a male dominated left brain approach. That's a stack of data sheets. That's useful, certainly. But it's like going to the doctor, and if you want your appendix out, you know, it's really good to have the doctor there. But, you know, it's the best place to die is the operating room as well. That there's not a holistic approach to medicine. There's not a holistic approach to the sciences, frankly. So archaeology and anthropology are littered with that kind of orientation that's very narrow. So indigenous people, to me, not just in the United States, but around the world, have talked of giants for eons. And I just find that it's a story that is in the collective unconscious unconsciousness of humanity for a reason. And it's inescapable. It's a part of our history. And I'm glad to, you know, give the evidence and articulate what I mean by that.
Certainly. And do you consider yourself now a giantologist?
I really feel like if you hook me up to the lie detector machine, I would say yes, that I do believe that, you know, giants are a part of our history. And I believe that the general themes like a lost world, lost continents, say in Atlantis, if you will, giants and little people, like these ancient androgynous gods, the idea that humans were genetically engineered, quite frankly, by a different species. I think that those general themes are accurate. Nobody has a time machine, so we all try to work on the details. But I really feel, you know, and which is a good time to segue into the Rosicrucians, Freemasons, Theosophists, Rudolf Steiner, Edgar Cayce, the great mystics, religious documents, and oral traditions from all around the planet all talk about giants as a reality. So the strange and specific nature of these things that are being promulgated by all these disparate sources throughout eons of time in different locations really lends credibility to this idea, mixed with, as we talk about in the book, just sober anatomical measurements of a stationary object, a human skeleton, over and over again by heads of anthropology and archaeology departments, by sober scientists throughout 150, 200 years, testifies to a different story.
Definitely. And before I continue, I'm just curious, because to me, I really never followed giants until 2011, about 7 years ago. One of our listeners, his father is from Iran, and I sent you an email before we started. Maybe you haven't read it yet, but apparently there was an area in southern Iran that was hit by an earthquake in 2010 or 2011. And apparently after the earthquake, a lot of wind came through the town and it basically unburied this city. And they found dozens and dozens of skeletons. Probably the shortest one was 10 feet tall, and mostly were women. And I have an explanation that I'm going to add to this interview at the end of the show. It's in Farsi, but we translated it into English. Very interesting story. But to you, when did this happen for you, the eureka moment where you said, I have to look into giants because it's not fairy tale after all?
When I was, it was probably like 15 years ago now, I was investigating the idea of Native American stonework in New England, being a stonemason myself. And my brother and I started to find odd structures in the woods that didn't look colonial. They certainly looked Native American, like stone turtles and serpents and mounds and chambers. And I looked into the idea that the colonists showed up and reported Native American stone ruins by virtue of reading town and county histories. And I found many accounts like strange stone fort, Indian fence, things like that, that the colonists reported. But I also found the first account I found in Deerfield, Massachusetts, was of an 8-foot skeleton with a head as big as a peck basket and double rows of teeth all around, reported by George Sheldon, who was a luminary around here. He started the prestigious Deerfield Academy and created the museum. And it was analyzed by Dr. Stephen Williams, who taught anatomy at Berkshire College and came from a lineage of doctors. And I found out that Sheldon had the femur bone of an over 8-foot skeleton shipped to him from Marion, Ohio. And I started to uncover all these different accounts in New England of 7, 8 and tall skeletons. So I went to the museum in Deerfield and I said, did you know that George Sheldon reported an 8-foot skeleton with double rows of teeth? And the guy said, no, the curator. He said, let me get his archaeological scrapbook for you. And I looked at it and I got that eureka moment. It was like the Da Vinci Code. It just something lit up and I knew what I was going to find. So I open up the pages and I see reports about mound builders and native civilizations and cultures. And littered in his scrapbook was these accounts of giant skeletons. And he had such an interest. Once again, he had this thigh bone shipped to his museum that was on display until the 1990, when the Native American Repatriation Act demanded that all bones get put back in the ground. And I am friends with the anthropologist who reinterred that thigh bone that was once on display of an over 8-foot tall skeleton. So obviously this thrust me into the arena of, like, you know, double rows of teeth, skeletons reported and measured by respected individuals. This is not a subjective thing. It's a measurement, once again, of a stationary object. That's what catches my attention. It isn't like, oh, do we believe this guy or not? It's more like, yeah, can you work a tape measure?
Interesting. What you just said about the Repatriation Act, let me just say this. Let's say you and I were to conduct an excavation and found the skeleton of a giant. Will that giant be considered, would it be considered a Native American? And if so, it would be repatriated according to, again, NAGPRA, the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act of 1990. They would be buried according to Native American customs, as opposed to being taken over by, say, a museum. Is this correct?
Yes, yes. And obviously, this is a very touchy issue, and I certainly understand that Native people don't want their ancestors' remains mess with it all. But it poses problems. Near the Columbia River in Washington State, a couple of years back, they found Kennewick Man, which is a 9,000-year-old skeleton. And it really has features that are either Caucasoid, or they call them Anu, like this indigenous Japanese people. They wondered really what kind of skeleton this was, what kind of person it was. And there was a long legal battle. And actually, the Smithsonian eventually tested the skeleton and found it was a distant relative of modern day Native Americans. But the point is that there is a lot of these mounds and places have been gone through, and the evidence was kind of hidden in plain sight because it was ignored by science. You know, so I'm hopeful that if something comes together, you know, like you bring in Native American people and tribes and scientists and you work together to try to solve the problem. But this might be solved on the Solomon Islands or some, you know, non-Midal or some place where giants have been reported. And there's a grave that you can excavate without all the legal hurdles. So I'm not like pushing too hard. I understand the Native American perspective. Lots of this has been lots of their ancient sites have been desecrated. But it's this kind of odd catch-22 where, you know, if it was 150 years ago and everybody was opening up the ancient burial mounds, there'd be no controversy here. Like, it'd be laid out on the table, if you will. But now it leaves us with this conundrum of trying to prove, you know, that this is a reality.
I have to the parapolitical researcher in me, and to some people this may be a conspiracy theorist in me, says this. Could this 1990 Repatriation Act be as a way to hide the truth? Also, and how do we know these bones belong to a native tribe? Is it just because the skeletons predate Columbus's arrival to the New World?
Well, the idea is that, you know, science admits or doesn't admit that there was anybody in the Americas before 13,000 years ago, although that's been overturned recently by a series of new finds like the Galt site in Texas. Now we have artifacts and remains that have been dated to about 23,000 years ago. So you have a situation where it wasn't even considered possible that there was anybody but Native Americans here. But there's two stories going on here, as far as I'm concerned. Excuse me. One is this anthropological mystery that why were there so many 7 and 8 foot tall Native American rulers buried in burial mounds, especially in the eastern half of the United States? Now, it looks like ancient America was more of a melting pot than we think, where flood survivors came, just like the strange Olmec people showed up around 2000 BC, that ancient America was probably more of a melting pot, more like the mystic Edgar Cayce talked about. But then there's another story, not just like these benevolent rulers of native society, the shamans and the wisdom keepers. There's also the native tales of a malevolent race of giants, portrayed as cannibalistic and red-haired sometimes. People are pretty familiar with the Lovelock Cave story and Sarah Winnemucca, the Paiute native who told us the oral traditions of her people and this ancient war. So I think, you know, as you see in the book, there are accounts of something that appears distinctly non-native. The anatomic anomalies, the utter enormous height of some of the skeletons, the burial context, and the assemblage of artifacts speak to something else. And not just in the United States, but in other places. So there are two parallel stories right here. And it is difficult to discern from a scientific viewpoint, like, oh, you know, we don't really believe this, that the people in the Americas took place in this way. So we're not going to give any credence to the idea that these are non-native remains sometimes. So, you know, we have a challenging situation. And for me as a researcher, I tend to look, you know, like in Sonora, Mexico, or isolated Pacific Islands or other places for evidence and just kind of let things rest in the United States for the time being.
You're going to have to tell me some of those locations in Sonora, because I drive through Sonora all the time and I didn't know that there were, you know, giant findings there. But I'm sure you've heard.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say in the book, there's the chapter, The Lost Giants of Sonora.
Yeah.
And that was one of the episodes in our show. And we met with Carlos Hayes, the son of Paxson Hayes, the explorer. And in we have the original press release photos in the 30s from Sonora of the 7.5 foot bundle burial of a giant skull that a mummified head and a huge gourd that Paxson Hayes, the explorer, is holding. And he has a picture that we presented too of the Lost City of Giants. And it looks like a set from Star Wars. Now, somewhere in that 100-mile square mile land of Sonora in the north is the Lost City of Giants. And Carlos Hayes, the son, said that he would take us there and lead an expedition. But when we were filming, there was a lot of travel warnings because there's a lot of like narco-terrorism stuff goes yeah. on there. So we didn't go, but that in the chapter is all the information that you might find interesting.
Interesting, yes. And also, I'm sure you mentioned the little people. I presume you're referring to the florist people from Indonesia, the Homo floresiensis, the opposite yes. of giants. Same thing here. We have an extinct species in the Homo genus. How do giants and little people disappear like that?
Yeah, you know, I'll give you a supernatural explanation that drives scientists crazy, but I'll quote Edgar Cayce, and he said there was a literal continent in the middle of the Atlantic that was Atlantis, just like Plato said, just like Herodotus, Aeolian, Plutarch. Even Homer talked about Aegygia, and all the chroniclers and the geographers said that Aegygia was in the middle of the Atlantic, and it's considered a fabled land. When you go to the British Isles, it's Albion, Lyoness, High Brazil, that the Tuatha Dé Danann, all these supernatural beings showed up after the flood 13,000 years ago and restarted civilization everywhere. And if you look at a site like Göbekli Tepe, it's 12,000 years old in Turkey, and it essentially looks like the repromulgation of civilization rather than the start of it. And when you go and see the crazy stonework in Peru and other places, it's the same thing. You have these androgynous creator gods who show up. They're carrying these strange man bags like the fish god Oannes in Sumeria. They bring advanced knowledge like Fuxi, the androgynous culture hero in China. He teaches the I Ching, which is wonderfully complex, and just like Oannes teaches geometry and on and on. So in Atlantis, giants and little people were reported to be part of the population, the general population. Now, the prototype of today that you and me, you know, reside in, you know, a 5'10", 6 foot tall human with five fingers and five toes is the new prototype. And it seems like there was a genetic intervention to create these beings. And the Bible even talks about the supernatural where the sons and daughters of men mate with earth women. And it, to me, it sounds like a, you know, like an extraterrestrial genetic intervention. The Crick and Watson, I think it was Watson, the scientist who sequenced the DNA. Yes. And I think it was, no, I think it was Crick. He said that the after reviewing the genome, the human genome, it seems as likely that humans evolved out of nothingness, basically out of amoebas. As it does 747 – no, what is it? A tornado hitting a dump and creating a 747.
All right.
So that's what a sober scientist said. And if you study DNA, you understand there are a lot of bridges that are created for these theories to stay in place, like plate tectonics is another one. There's theories that are accepted as fact that really aren't, like out of Africa. So I really think that the idea of giants and little people existing is almost like a supernatural one. And that's a concession I have to make. But nevertheless, I think just like Neanderthals and Denisovans and Homo floresiensis, that humans basically wiped out these ancient races. And in Indonesia, we have 3 foot tall cousins that lived up until 50,000 years ago. And at first it was dismissed as like, you know, Down syndrome, medical condition, island dwarfism because of the isolation of Flores, the island in Indonesia. Like they have baby mammoths there that live there. But no, they found a second set of remains, 900,000 years old, that were even smaller, and that they found that they actually came out of Africa and landed over a million years ago there as well. So we know solidly that this thing is considered an anthropological heresy, is now considered a fact.
Then the question is, why aren't our history books rewritten?
I think it's just, you know, when you work in a professional atmosphere, you know, like if you are teaching something
status
30
quo.
Years, status quo, I am teaching that, you know, plate tectonics is the way it is. And I am really, it's agenda, it's survival, it's ego. And it's like people take bitter sides too. Like, you know, religion, like spirit and science blended is a marvelous thing. It's an alchemical wonder. That's why our ancient peoples created, you know, the Great Pyramid and other things like that. It's the blending of science and spirit. But now there are two different camps that are at war with each other. It's like politics, you know, and religion. It's, instead of like, let's figure out these problems together, it's I won't yield an inch to this other side. And I have friends who are like hardcore skeptics. And, you know, I speak at their classes and at universities and things like that and try to be open-minded in these investigations. But I could see that's just like, I don't want to yield any scientific validity to what you're saying and then vice versa. And both sides play off the worst instincts, you know, like the alternative researcher who doesn't do his homework and the skeptic who is really arrogant, dismissive. So, you know, I really feel like a different approach is needed, you know, to unravel these mysteries. And to your question, it's painful that how long science takes to change, but it's inevitable. It's inevitable. You know, people are, you know, fans of your show and fans of alternative ideas because they resonate. You know, it's the intuition of humans is like, I know there's something going on here. That's why Ancient Aliens is so popular and alternative ideas are so popular. And, you know, conspiracy ideas. We're told, you know, oh, you're out of your mind if you believe in conspiracies. And I – you know, my house was a shrine to the Kennedys, Bobby and John, when I grew up, because my mom grew up in Boston and my dad grew up in East Boston and they met the Kennedys. They had a summer house in our town. And I quickly found out when I got older that they both were iced by the CIA, that, you know, John was like, you know, they were trying to get rid of the Fed and do all these things. And just the one line of Oswald saying, I'm a patsy. That's game over. You know what I mean? Like if you're paying attention. But then I realized that I did, you know, these long, thorough investigations with reams of documents to prove the case. And, you know, I saw that that didn't matter. It was like I was a nut for getting into this. So then I'm like, no, I'm open to it's a juvenile taboo. And it's actually the CIA was originally turn people off of UFOs by calling it all nutty because they were very concerned about what was going on. So, you know, that's a long-winded way of saying that these ideas will never go away because people just know intuitively there's a reality here.
I'll be interested to know what your take on the JFK assassination was. We're going to discuss that later if you'd like. But let me go back to the 1990 Repatriation Act. Again, I'm going to wear my conspiracy theorist hat for a moment. Could this be a concerted effort to make sure that, you know, why are the bones of these giants hardly accessible for the court of research science, like you mentioned in your book? Could it be because now they have this Repatriation Act that does not allow further analysis? Because if we were allowed to unbury a lot of these bones, we could prove with today's technology, without any shadow of a doubt, that yes, giants existed.
Yes, yes. And it can serve multiple purposes, one being the benevolent cause of like, let's but, you know, I'll play devil's advocate right away here. It's just like, have we ever trusted the U.S. government to do anything benevolent, you know, the way Native Americans are treated? And it's just like, what, now you're going to be like above board? You have every reason to be suspicious. There's no question about it. And I see when you read through all the Smithsonian's documentation, there's a lot of arrogance and dismissiveness around this idea. But they never addressed that their own scientists reported these things, including, you know, once again, Alton, Illinois, 1873, a 36-inch skull reported by T.M. Perrin, their archaeologist, along with other giant skulls. Now, that isn't a 7-foot-tall skeleton. That's 36-inch circumference is utterly outrageous. And it's never really addressed, you know, like, would the guy have 5 martinis for lunch and he forgot his tape measure? It just doesn't make any sense. But, you know, it's like when I search for this idea of a lost world, the scientists will say, yeah, get back to me when you show me the 40,000-year-old sunken pyramid, you know, and maybe I will. But it's ignoring all this evidence. Like the entire globe is littered with petroglyphs and rock art and statues of six fingers and six toes. giant hands and feet, just like Samuel 21:20, that passage in the Bible, the giant of Gath had six fingers and six toes. Now, that's beyond coincidence. You have like these places of emergence, like in Botswana, where there's a giant footprint with six fingers carved into the rock that is considered sacred by the indigenous people there. And it has six toes, and on, isolated Pacific islands all around the planet. So I don't know why the idea of giants is considered so taboo, because just like UFOs, you're like, oh, you know, you're an idiot or you're a fool or you don't understand how science works by investigating these things. And yeah, I like to stay away from the conspiracy angle on one hand, because I don't want to bog down my investigation. If it's a reality, which I believe, I want to prove the case. But on the other hand, there are a lot of weird conspiracies that is no question they're true, that people couldn't even believe about our world and the nature of it. So I wish I had a time machine, and we'll know more answers in the future. But right now, I'm open to whatever possibility. And it's just so strange that this isn't like a proven commodity at this point.
But there are burial locations of some of these skeletons in the United States, correct? And Native American tribes know where they are. Would it be possible for the scientific community or somebody like you and your brother to obtain permission from the tribe, say the Hopi or whatever tribe that might be, and say, we would like, in conjunction with you, to explore this, to tell the world that yes, giants existed, but we need your permission? Is that something that can be granted?
Yeah, I would think so. You would need the right circumstances and the right evidence. I would say out west, you know, in some of the crazy cave places in like Arizona and Utah, way up in the desert highlands. The thing is that Native Americans have been always very secretive about their burial locations. For the obvious reasons, and they have not shared a lot of their wisdom. They did with some of the early Smithsonian chroniclers and like the Monrovian missionary John Heckelwelder lived with the Delaware Indians and was told all these legends of giants, but they are very reluctant to work with Western scientists. But I agree, you know, me and Hugh Newman, my co-author, my brother, you know, we're on the case of a lot of investigations. I'll just give you one right here that your audience will find interesting. In the 1980s, Grape Nuts, the cereal, they were filming off of Kauai, you know, one of the beautiful Hawaiian islands. And it was probably a year ago. One of the pilots, the helicopter pilots, they had to fly everybody in for like a week to shoot this commercial. And he wrote the story or told the story to a newspaper in Kauai. And he told about how when he was filming, the other pilot said, "Do you want to see a burial cave?" And he showed them there was this 2,000-foot cliff. And 200 feet down in the cave, they flew right close to it. There was a bunch of skeletons in the back of the cave that were normal sized, and there was a burial, a male and a female in the front, that were absolutely enormous, and the stones that were closed off the cave had fallen down over time. Now, I talked to an archaeologist in Hawaii, and I talked to the pilot himself, and the pilot said, "I just called." He said, I wanted him to take me there, and he said, "Yeah, I'm up for it." He talked to the other pilot to refresh his memory, and the other pilot said the skull's difference was between an orange and a basketball. He said they were like over 8 feet tall, absolutely enormous, like nothing I've ever seen, and these are just two regular guys flying helicopters. So I talked to the archaeologist, and he says that what happened was they would take – when there was a royal burial, they would kill, you know, a number of commoners or slaves and put them in the cave, that they would send everybody out to sea in a raft, and then they would have these natives would climb down on vines, these massive cliffs, you know, 200 feet down into the cave. They would bury all the skeletons, wall it over with rock, and then cut the strings and fall to their death so nobody would find out where it was.
Oh, wow. So the people that were regular size were just sent to their deaths.
The slaves were killed and put in, but the regular sized dudes who buried all the bones cut the vines and then fell to their death 1,800 feet.
Right.
Yes, which is wild. And then I told the guy, I said, I want to go in there with the helicopter and film this, but we won't disturb the site. We won't touch anything. And the guy said, let me talk to one of the native elders. And he said, he got back to me and he's like, that the natives in Hawaii believe there's mana, there's supernatural energy in the bones. So you can't even look at them. And they shut down my request to go film. I was going to rappel down and just film this cave. I might go back with a drone, actually. I'm probably getting in trouble.
What would happen?
Because it was such a compelling story.
What would happen if you, you take a drone there? What would happen?
I don't want to be disrespectful to anybody's beliefs. And I believe that is a decent compromise. I would have to check it out and see what goes down. You know, it's in Kauai. I know the location. But it's just one of those examples of it's this oddest thing, you know, like it's just out of reach. You know, I can give you evidence for, 13,000 year old sophisticated civilizations, great floods, Denisovans and hobbits. I can tell you as a stonemason that there is stonework around the planet that is so outrageously engineered and cut that, the Amira Indians couldn't do it in Peru, that, the Assyrian was not built, in Egypt at the time they claim, on and on and on. But when it comes to giants, I can give a lot of really compelling evidence. But that 9 foot, 10 foot skeleton, it has eluded me, and it's the oddest thing. And all I could say is I will remain on the case.
No, this is just fascinating because, again, the more they try to hide the history, the more I'm compelled to pursue it. So I can see why you have that adrenaline to move forward. But we've heard plenty of stories about national museums doing away with the bones and falsely declaring these people never existed. Why is that? And why is it okay to talk about every type of dinosaur, but not about giants?
It's a very good question. I wonder, because there's weird stuff going on in this world. There are shadowy groups and cabals. And I would just imagine that there's Illuminati freaks with like 12-foot skeletons in their showrooms and stuff. Yeah.
Private showrooms, right?
Totally, totally. And that's another thing. There are lots of artifacts and skeletons that are in private collections by some of the weird elites on our planet. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's a really good question. I wish I had an answer. Like, why there's so much why is so derided if you look into this, why it is considered such a silly topic when we know that there was megafauna and megaflora of all different varieties. There were beavers as big as Volkswagen, beetles where I live here in Western Massachusetts, the massive ferns, massive creatures everywhere, and probably different atmospheric conditions as well. I think giants, it gets into the world of the supernatural, genetic intervention. Like, science can deal with, like, say, hobbits that look like they are just like some deviation off of the regular human Homo sapien tree or whatever. But the idea of the supernatural, the extraterrestrial, the multidimensional, the interdimensional, those ideas, it's funny. A lot of skeptics point to like alternative minded people. They say that, you believe in this idea of a lost world, or like you're in a fantasy world with Dungeons and Dragons and Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones, and you just can't face everyday reality. And I would say the opposite is true. It takes a lot of courage to talk about the things we're talking about, because you catch heat from everyone. The people have been trained to ridicule these ideas. And we're tapping into this intuition that there is this lost world in reverse, like the uniformitarianism, the gradualists in geology. They like slow, gradual change because they want to believe in a stable universe. And this universe is a freak show. It's anything but stable, and the Earth is not stable. So cataclysm and these abrupt changes are actually part of our history, we know. But science is very, very slow to react, and they want something that is predictable that they can like get their head around, because they haven't opened their mind to different dimensions and different possibilities, only in the most limited way. So it's, I think it's people like us who kind of push this envelope forward, and thus you have, you know, a lot of people intuitively are on board with this. But you know, to circle back to your original point, is it's just like I don't know. I wish I had a clear and concise answer like I can give on other topics. I don't know why there's this, all this mystery and allure around giants and why it's considered verboten. It's you would think that it'd be like, oh, sure, there were giant creatures and there was giant humans, and or at least let's be open to that possibility. But that's not the case. I will keep you updated if I learn more.
I mean, I could see how they, if they wanted to erase some of our history, they would erase dinosaurs. But, you know, dinosaurs, even the word dinosaurs was not even around a couple of hundred years ago. So it makes you wonder. And if, whenever I go to the Smithsonian, and I've been to Washington, D.C. and the National Museum in New York, and I see these massive dinosaurs there, I ask the people there, so are these real? Like, no, that's plaster of Paris. And where do you have the bones? Oh, they're in some vaults somewhere else. They never show you the real bones.
Yeah, I have to say that, you know, dinosaurs were considered a fantasy, and then they got uncovered. It was right. Like, you know, and the same, if you look through the records, as we have, and we've pulled out hundreds of examples in a book, Giants on Record, to display to people. And this, I'm sorry, this in the British Isles and France and Italy, it's the same phenomena. It's just astounding. You got like sworn testimonies by the Captain Allen in Sicily, 1823, and he has this hand-drawn picture of an 11-foot skeleton and a piece of marble with strange hieroglyphs that they found 175 feet down in a marble quarry in Italy. You know, and this guy comes home and he gives this long sworn testimony. He writes, a friend about it. And we have this, you know, Captain Allen gives this account of an 11-foot skeleton in Sicily, 1823. And this is everywhere in so many places. Respected people, you know, talking about the most outrageous things. And they are pointing to different ages. You know, we know, if you're paying attention, that this is, you know, that there have been other worlds and other civilizations hundreds of thousands of years ago, maybe millions of years ago. And sometimes some of these finds are like deep, deep in the earth, and they're just out of context, you know? So it's like we were talking a couple minutes ago about agenda. Like, don't tell me, I've been teaching this for 30 years. I'm the expert. You know, it's not like I'm hungry for knowledge and my mind is totally open. It's like, you know, I got to send my daughter to college. I got my new BMW. You know, like, I don't really want to hear about all these new finds you're talking about. And it's unfortunate. I just think, you know, people who are interested in these ideas just hang on, because there's been so much change. Every golden calf, every pillar of science has been dethroned in the last like 15 years, with Göbekli Tepe out of Africa being debunked, essentially hobbits being found, the Denisovans being found, and the Clovis barrier being obliterated. Those were all the pillars of archaeology and anthropology for the last 70 years, and they held on to them even though there was so much evidence to the contrary. So feel that there was a lot of progress being made with these alternative ideas.
But what could giants derail? Let's look at academia for a moment. You have a bunch of anthropology professors or archaeologists out there. And if you presented the evidence, wouldn't that be more fuel for them to, oh, wow, this is a great discovery. I'm glad that we are rediscovering our past. Extend the curriculum, create more classes. Wouldn't that be more profitable for them as opposed to hiding it? This is why I find it very, very interesting that they want to hide this, unless there's a reason why.
There might be some strange reason why. And there's a lot of researchers who, Corey Good, David Wilcock, I've heard them talk about, you know, bases in Antarctica and giants buried there. And yeah. I've heard some strange tales. I had an intelligence agent contact me after my show, my first episode. He's in Kentucky, and what he does is, when tourists want to go to different hotspots, he's like, he provides security for them, where he basically, you know, makes sure that they're going to be protected from even from the CIA, you know, from you know, it's kind of like white intelligence, you know, white hat intelligence.
Yeah.
And he said that he had a document from I think it was OSS at the time, in like 1944, about the lost races of the United States, and about how a lot of the archaeological finds revealed like a lost race of giants that actually existed in the United States, and was part of a document that he read because he had classified clearance at the time. And he just found it really interesting that that it's a known quantity amongst say intelligence agencies, or it was at the time. And you know, to your point, I'll point out, like, the soberness and the sanity of academia shows up with, like, the new Denisovan finds, right? I'll give some background. The Denisovans are a human cousin who was, I think, first found in 2010, if I'm not mistaken. In a Siberian cave, they found these two teeth that were so large that they thought they were the teeth of a cave bear. They took them to the Max Planck Institute. They sequenced them, and they realized that they were – not only were they a new human cousin, that they had mated with humans and Neanderthals. So the osteological evidence we have is just two massive teeth that display that these Denisovans once existed in the past and interbred with us. Now, the head of the Max Planck Institute, his name, evolutionary biology, Svante Paavo, is releasing a paper where they have a skull fragment that is unusually thick. And Paavo basically said that these Denisovans were enormously robust and tall, and, you know, they basically are portrayed as giant. So when I started this investigation, I was mocked by science, because the idea that science could miss a lost race, especially a lost race of giants, was totally absurd. Now, what we found is science indeed missed a lost race. There was a lost race that appears to be giant called the Denisovans, who interbred with humans and Neanderthals, that has been found. And the only evidence is just a couple bones that we have that are absolutely enormous. So the idea that science has all the answers, you know, that's another thing that, you know, I go all around the globe. I scuba dive at, you know, deep, you know, lost places, look for lost cities. And there is a lot out there that has not been found. We know very little about the oceans. We know less about the oceans than the moon. There are definitely lost cities and lost bones and places to be found all around the world. Do not buy into this idea that it's all been mapped and everything like that. That's just not true.
Since you're mentioning that you scuba dive and been around the world looking at all these things that are under our water, your take on the Yanagani, am I saying this right, that the in Japan,
Yanaguni
yes. Pyramids, do you think, as Professor Robert Schock says, that they're natural formations?
I think that they're not standalone formations, like they were built up. Well, geologically, when you look at it, what it appears like to me is that, like, they're negatives, like it was an ancient quarry almost. It looks like it was worked, but when people think of a pyramid, it's not like there's a bunch of blocks there that were brought in to build it. What you see is what appears to be the workings of man on, you know, on a scale that looks like almost like a quarry, where you see a lot of negatives.
Yeah, the angles.
Yes, the angles, and there's a lot – that's interesting, the site. And, you know, an archaeologist will say, show me the artifacts in context that reveal the age. And, you know, I can get down with that idea. I understand that, you know, you need context. But I think it's, you know, and I know Robert Schock, I have a lot of respect for him. I just was on the panel with him talking about the Lost Hall records under the paw of the Sphinx at Contact mm-hmm. in the Desert. And, you know, I like his sober approach, but he's willing to entertain a lot of things. Yeah, Yanaguni is a very interesting place, and Professor Kimura has found some other locations in the area as well, and that's what I would say is the key to finding it, is find more sites in the area, and you will find remnants of a lost civilization. I'll say quickly, in the Sicily Channel, Italian archaeologists 3 years ago found at 131 feet down a 40-foot megalith with, three human-drilled holes in it that is at least 10,000 years old. Now, if scientists haven't found Göbekli Tepe, that'd be like one of the greatest finds, you know, of the modern age, but nobody really knows about it. My brother and I are planning to dive there actually next year. So it's 130 feet down, a 10,000-year-old, 40-foot-tall man-made megalith, you know? So another example that science has it wrong about the age of civilization and the capabilities of ancient people. Now, I'm a big fan of the idea that there was a pre-existing, civilization. But, you know, there are sites around the planet that I firmly believe in the Azores and the Canaries and Bimini, we will find evidence of an ancient civilization there. And those are, you know, the investigations that I undertake. And, you know, I really think in 50 years, these kind of odd ideas that we're talking about now will be considered factual. And I don't think there'll be a lot of apology letters, but I think people are starting to realize that there is a strange history to planet Earth.
Definitely. And by the way, you gave me license to ask you questions that were probably no part of the book. So if a thought comes to mind, like right now, I'm getting one. Dr. Samir Osmanagish, the Bosnian pyramid, in your opinion, natural or man-made?
I lean towards natural, and I like Samir, and I think it's great to carry out these investigations. I just I haven't seen enough geological evidence archaeological evidence like artifacts, and I don't know, when you get into something and you get in sideways, you kind of like you want to prove your case so much that you can blind yourself to the truth, and then you dig deeper and deeper. And they've been at it for like 13 years there. And I would think if it were site, even if it was 28,000 years old, they would reveal more evidence. And I'm not dissing anyone. I'm fully open to the idea. But I would just say if you hook me up to the lie detector test, I would say it's striking me as a natural formation, you know, which is a bummer to me because I'm all about like ancient sites being outrageously old. And I firmly believe there are sites on the planet that will be found that are not just 13,000 years old, but 25 or 50,000 years old in the oceans, in the Atlantic and the Pacific. But I'm open to see, you know, I follow that story and like I like Samir, he's a really nice guy. And, you know, I just wish him well. That at this present moment is my opinion, but I'm willing to change it too.
You would think that now with the advent of technology, I mean, ground penetration, radar, drones, that you could have a dozen drones flying all over areas of Egypt or the desert southwest in the United States and just pinpointing areas like they do with oil drilling. Use the same thing to find all these perhaps lost civilizations. But, you know, I honestly think, Jim, that our gravity was different thousands of years ago, or at least the oxygen levels were much higher. And that's why probably we had bigger flora, bigger fauna, and perhaps even longer lifespan. Your take on that?
Oh, totally, totally. That's absolutely a part of this. If you follow the work of Emanuel Velikovsky or now David Talbot, who's a comparative mythologist, Symbols in an Alien Sky is one of his videos, just really fascinating. He shows the same petroglyphs all around the planet are basically displaying plasma discharges and what the indigenous people were seeing in the heavens. You know, he pegs that event, I think, at like 3,500 years ago, a little later than that, where basically there was a different configuration of planets. That's what Velikovsky talked about. And we have an asteroid belt, and that is sure evidence there was another planet. I think some people called it Marduk, that there was a different configuration and different atmospheric conditions on the Earth. I'm definitely convinced. And that weaves into the story of giants and probably the disappearance of giants, because there's a lot of argument like, oh, if you have a 25-foot, you know, being, they couldn't deal with, you know, today's atmospheric conditions and things like that, which may be true. But, you know, there was for a couple million years, there was a pretty stable situation going on Earth. And then 12,000 years ago, 13,000 years ago, the late Pleistocene ended abruptly, and the mammoths were destroyed. There was a massive cataclysm that we now know was more violent and destructive than the Chicxulub strike 65 million years ago that wiped out the dinosaurs. 13,000 years ago. Now, just this alone, like Graham Hancock's been beating this drum, and a lot of other researchers like myself and Andrew Collins, that there was a cataclysm. But even to tell that story, you were derided like you were a nut. Now, science has completely verified that 10% of the Earth's landmass was destroyed by fire. Just imagine that happening today, only 13,000 years ago. Complete disruption and cataclysmic change. And to your point, no question about it, atmospheric conditions were absolutely different, I believe, and were probably the reason why we had megafauna and megaflora. So there's a lot of pieces of this puzzle that tell a different story of the past that is not in alignment. You know, I'll say this. There are two general theories about existence, if you will. I think you have science. It's like, you know, Big Bang, amoeba, evolution, Australopithecines, Homo sapiens, the rise of civilization, and here we are at the apex. And then there's kind of an alternative view, like a God creator, you know, consciousness were created, time and space, and where we find ourselves now. That there were cycles of the rise and fall of civilizations. There is extraterrestrial manipulation taking place. There are lost worlds, and there's a lot of up and down and cataclysm that's baked into the cake. So you have these competing theories. Every geologist, biologist, anthropologist, and scientist believes in the former, and they are not open to the idea that there was a previous civilization, that there was rampant cataclysm, that there is a metaphysical underpinning to the universe of time and space, although quantum mechanics is telling us that. So basically, there's these competing theories that basically do not allow within the sciences a look into the things you're talking about, like the atmospheric differences.
Well, imagine one of these giants, say 10 feet tall at 400, 500 pounds, 700 pounds, or even beyond that, with the atmospheric pressure and the gravity, how could they even survive running?
If you want to, I can point your audience to a really good case. They can go to the Giant of Castelnau, C-A-S-T-L-E-A-U-N, I think that's a Castelnau. In France, 1892, you can find it on Wikipedia. There was an 11-foot-6 giant that was not found in the form. There was a series of bones that there is a picture of at on Wikipedia. The femoral midshaft, a piece of that, and pieces of the giant that indicate it was like an 1,100-pound, 11-foot-6 giant skeleton that found by the anthropologist Lepage. It was a peer-reviewed case. Anthropologists from around the country at the time in France looked at this case. It was in the New York Times. My buddy Micah Ewers wrote extensively about it, and you can find the whole story on Wikipedia. Now, I went to find those bones. Hugh and I did. Now, Lepage was like an anti-Semitic weirdo who got fired from the University of Montpellier. So we went to the university and couldn't find the bones, and they might be in a private collection. Obviously, we want to DNA test them, look at them, and we're on the trail of them. But an idea of this, you know, 10, 11-foot giant that you're talking about was buried in the lowest level of a burial mound in France and scientifically verified through peer review in the late 1890s. But to address the atmospheric conditions, I agree. I don't want to chalk it up to like this is all being kept from us. And that might be true. It could be just the ignorance of science, the closed-minded way of thinking about these problems. But it also seems there is some strange cabalish behavior where our real origins are just not laid out to us in a way that's that it should be.
We have to take a one and only break, but let me just say a few things. When you mentioned that some of the members of all these secret societies, perhaps they may have, you know, Freemasons, one example, may have giant skeletons in their private collection. And perhaps if you're 33 degrees or above, then you can be able to see that. But for the rest of us, of course, not. But I think of Skull and Bones. You probably hear of the story of the Bones of Geronimo. They've been sued at Skull and Bones, the native tribe, to claim those bones back. So obviously, they do it knowing that they're not allowed to do it, but they display it as a sign of victory, don't you think?
I can get back to that on the other side if you want. I get
yes.
some.
Sure. That's
okay.
That's fine. And when we come back, I want to discuss a few cases where some explorers documented folks in their diaries, live giants. I'm not talking about bones, live giants and their interactions. And also, what is it going to take to restore to the light of common acceptance the evident existence of these giants? A lot more when we come back. How can people buy Giants on Record, Jim?
Amazon, Giants on Record, Hugh Newman, Jim Vieira, Amazon.com. We have a page there, and yeah, I check it out. You know, I don't want to like talk up our game, but we worked on that book for about 10 years of like, and we're both freaks. You know, I'm like just hanging out with my cat right now, and Hugh and I both are guys who have 500 tabs open on our computer, and we just dive into a story. And it was a labor of love. And I think if you read the book, you will see there's a story here, that this isn't fake news. There's a legit story here.
Absolutely, folks. Giants on Record, a lot more when we come back. And to all the Veritas members, I've included a bonus third segment with a translated narration of the message I received about 8 years ago from the father of one of our listeners in Iran, discussing the giants found on an unearthed city in southern Iran after an earthquake, and it's at the border with Afghanistan, which lends credence to the giant from Kandahar story. I've also included a link on our website where you can see some of the images, including an eye made of gold with extremely thin gold wires that were probably attached to the optic nerve, which could have allowed the person to see. I guarantee you, you won't find this story anywhere else. I've looked for 9 years and I haven't been able to find it. So don't go anywhere. I'm here with Jim Vieira and much more when we return in the member section. This is Mel Fabregas, and you are listening to Veritas.
Thank you for listening to the first part of this very important Veritas interview. To listen to the rest and all of our material, proceed to the members section or subscribe at veritasradio.com. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for MMS, hemp oil, pure organic sulfur, and other great products. Thank you.